On this week's episode of TWIM, find out why our family finds this podcast too edgy to listen to, why Ben's gonna go to hell even though he doesn't use swear words. We cover movies new to the box office top 10, Miss Bala and They Shall Not Grow Old, deep dive reviews of Cold Pursuit, The Lego Movie 2, and What Men Want, and previews of Alita Battle Angel, Happy Death Day to You, and Isn't It Romantic?
Well, you know, my ancestry isn't all hamster. I'm 1/16th wolf with a little Wolverine in there somewhere, but that's besides the point.
Okay, welcome to TWIM with Seth, Andy, and Ben. We're two brothers and a cousin who discuss last week, this week, and next week in movies at the box office. New to the box office top 10 last weekend was number 3. Coming in at number 3 was Miss Bala.
American from Los Angeles.
My friend.
I need you to do a favor for me first. You mess around and I'll kill you both.
Miss Bala earned $6.7 million in its first weekend. It came in behind The Upside and Glass. It's at 25% on Rotten Tomatoes. Does that surprise you guys? Not really.
Not really.
Not really at all. It was... Well, we talked about it.
It wasn't awful. It just didn't...
It was going to be better than it was.
Well, we spoiled it last week, so if you want to hear our deep dive spoiler review, listen to last week's episode number 10. Gina Rodriguez plays Gloria, an American visiting Mexico for a beauty pageant. She gets held hostage by violent Mexican criminals, and there's a lot of suspense about whether she's going to survive, whether she's going to rescue her friend, whether she's going to be raped.
And she's quite attractive.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that she didn't have her big budget Hollywood debut on a better movie.
Do you know where she came from, P.S.?
I'm guessing she's Mexican, but I don't know.
Or like, because this is her big breakthrough movie?
Oh, well, I got to know her in Jane the Virgin. Have you ever seen her?
Oh, that's why I know her. Got it.
Okay, number 10 is They Shall Not Grow Old.
I was 16 years old and my father allowed me to go.
I was just turned 17 at the time.
I was 16.
I was 15 years.
When they came to us, they were frightened children and had to be made into soldiers.
All right, boys, here it comes. We're in the pictures.
I gave every part of my youth to do a job.
There was a job to be done, and you just got on and did it.
They Shall Not Grow Old came in at number 10. It's been out for several weeks, 7 weeks. It earned $10.8 million domestically. It's at 99% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Wow.
If you can believe it. Peter Jackson directed. I want to see this so bad. I'm kind of kicking
myself. You haven't seen it yet?
No, I haven't had time because I'm always trying to see whatever's going to be the next big movie. Okay.
I mean, this is one you have to see either way. Like, you just really need to see
it. I'm definitely going to.
Is this the one that I could take my conservative parents to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it depends what they're conservative about, because it's about war, and there are plenty of dead people shown in it, because it's a documentary.
Yeah, but it's...
It's not much more violent than maybe the Bible.
No. Compared to the Bible, this is like a Disney movie.
So this is we're talking about They Shall Not Grow Old, directed by Peter Jackson, who did Lord of the Rings series. They took actual footage from 100 years ago, which was originally in black and white and silent. They digitally remastered the footage, adding sound and color. They show British troops during World War I as they faced the frontline battle in Belgium. The footage was studied by lip reading experts, which is so interesting to me. So they have lip readers make transcripts of what the people were actually saying, and then they dub over the audio. So then you're seeing the type of footage we're used to with color, sound,
Seth,
and remastered visuals.
Visuals. Have you ever seen the Seinfeld episode where he dates a deaf girl?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And she can read his lips from across the room. I just thought of that.
The lip reading in this, I saw a little, it was like an interview with Peter Jackson. So they didn't just get forensic lip readers. They did research on where the film came from beforehand to figure out what the dialect was for those troops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they got voice performers that could do the right dialect?
Well, for the lip readers, that was the information the lip readers needed, but also for the performers. They got accent accurate people. And there's another thing I just learned today. I'm really disappointed. after the after the movie ends and there are credits, there's like another 20 minutes of interviews and making of, and I totally missed it.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to get this. I hope when it comes out on iTunes, it has, you know, additional features too. You know how sometimes they have like commentary from the director and stuff.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen the actual movie. I want to see it.
Okay, because I talked about it a bit a couple weeks ago. You guys, yeah, really need to see it.
You did a mini review in episode 9. So if you want to hear Ben's mini review, listen to episode 9.
And I don't know why it looks depressing to me. Is it depressing?
Well, yeah. I mean, World War
I. It's depressing because it's
pretty
war.
Rough. Yeah. And I talked about it previously, but this movie starts out during the trench warfare part of World War I. And it had been going on for a couple of years where the story begins. And the trench warfare was these troops, the Germans were on one side. And then, France and then the France allies were on the other side and they had nowhere to go. So they just dug down in trenches. And it was the type of environment where there was nowhere to go. No one could lead a charge. And so they would have just snipers constantly overseeing the area. And the stories go like, if you just like put a finger up above like the trench, it would get shot off.
Like in Downton Abbey.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you haven't? So my understand, like my visuals of World War I are from the depiction in Wonder Woman and Downton Abbey. And when I saw the previews for They Shall Not Grow Old, I was like, yep, it looks basically the way it's been portrayed. But there is a scene in Downton Abbey where a guy wants to get injured so he can get sent home. So he lights a cigarette lighter and sticks it just barely above the trench and somebody snipes his hand.
Oh, wow.
And then, he's able to go home.
Yeah, the stories are... they're horrible. They're just living in these mud trenches for a really long time. It was a time in, our history where there wasn't an awareness of mental illness. And there's a thing called shell shock. Soldiers on the front lines, there would be constant bombs dropping, constant shooting. And they would, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but they would, now we call it shell shock. Instead of being attentive and direct, they would kind of have that 1,000-yard stare and they kind of lost their motive to be in the war. And in the early parts of World War I, some of these soldiers, they were deemed as being weak-minded, and many of them were executed because we didn't, as a society, understand that you can't have someone the front row of trenches for a month and a half and then the next day wonder why they're not all cordial at a tea party. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What struck me is that in the images they show, I only saw the preview, and I mentioned this to you, Ben, when you did the review, but their teeth look so mangled, teeth.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, I'm sure that's how it was 100 years ago.
Sure.
Because it's been 100 years since the war ended, yep. Right? Just over 100 years?
Yep, just over. I also mentioned on Twitter, I listened to this documentary on a podcast documentary called Hardcore History, where they went all through World War I. And talking about, when you say trench warfare, which was... that was the only part of this movie that was about World War I. It's kind of like saying, oh, I know all about your life because I saw you weak in high school. yeah. There was so much more to the war that is, to me, fascinating.
I can't wait to see this movie. Okay. By the way, speaking of lip reading, I did want to mention, have you guys seen that YouTube channel, Bad Lip Reading, where he does lip reading of like these guys in the NFL?
It's so funny.
It's uncanny how well, because you look at their lips and you swear that they're saying exactly what is dubbed over their voices. It's insane how good they can do it.
That's actually a really good medium to make those kind of jokes.
Yeah.
I actually just watched this thing on the news recently, and one of the big scares for the next few elections is that they have these algorithms or something where they can get famous leaders and people running for office, and they'll put like really inappropriate, like opposite side of the spectrum of their political stances, saying things like, so it looks like they're actually saying them live.
It's called deep fakes.
Yeah.
It's where they take
machine. Isn't that an Adobe program?
Pardon me?
Isn't that an Adobe program? I thought Adobe made the software. It could get a sample clip of you talking.
That may be how it's done. I'm not totally sure, but they use machine learning in this advanced program they can take any footage of someone speaking and skew like their facial expressions and how their mouth moves and pretty much change
what
the tone.
Saying.
Yeah, even without changing the words, just changing their expression and how they speak.
Okay.
completely changed the meaning. It's incredible. They'll show, I saw a YouTube video on it. They show this guy talking, like, I think it was like Obama they used as an example. They show like the original clip, and then they show a modified clip next to it. And you can't tell. It looks real. You just
that honestly is one of the scariest things. I don't know why, but that scares me.
It's scary because at some point we're not going to be able to trust media. We're going to have to say, okay, was this video
doctored? Can we trust media already? And now we won't even be able to trust them still.
Well, I think we don't really question video. Like if there's a viral video going, we don't say, well, was that with this doctored or did it really happen? We sometimes do, but it's mostly trust video.
But it's almost going to take us back to pre like cell phone videos because we won't know what's real and what's not in some ways.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It modifies it on such a subtle level that you can't, it's hard to discern.
So that covers, and then we just talked about They Shall Not Grow Old. That covers new to the box office.
Top
coming
10.
Next week, new to the top 10. So They Shall Not Grow Old has been out for 7 weeks, but it's just now hit the top 10. So it must have been in limited release, and then it went out to a wider release.
But do you, just really quick, do you think it's 98%? Because it's kind of like, who's going to like say it's not good to revere those guys, you know?
No, I think it deserves it, but it is a documentary. I think part of your question is, are they getting, what's it called? Are they getting adverse selection because the type of people who want to see that movie are more likely to rate it higher? Kind of like Dragon Ball. I mean, the people who like that movie must like, I don't understand what they could like.
Yeah, I think Michael really let us down by not getting us.
He let me down. I think he was just being a contrarian. I think that's kind of his human nature.
Well, really, legitimately though, that movie, what was it on Rotten Tomatoes? Like 87%?
Yeah.
So definitely me and Ben missed something. We missed something that everybody else could see.
So maybe what he was saying is that like he has a fact that people like that, but maybe it's not his cup of tea.
Yeah, okay. So if you're lost what we're talking about, we did a review of Dragon Ball Super Broly where Ben and I both said it's a really dumb movie. I said the IQ level was like on the floor, but it was highly rated in Rotten Tomatoes. And so your brother said that we didn't understand that world. That was a message you conveyed to us. And so we asked him to basically explain himself, and he didn't do it. So maybe he'll do it
next
week.
I don't blame him. I mean, would you really want to be in the position of defending that movie? Like, what can you say?
That's a good point.
Okay, let's move on to what's coming out this weekend. There's four new movies in wide release. The first let's discuss is Cold Pursuit, starring Liam Neeson.
I'm no speech giver. I'm just a regular guy who keeps a stretch of civilization open. But I really am honored to be named Citizen of the Year.
Mr. Coxman?
Yeah.
It's about your son.
He's dead.
Tell me what happened.
He got mixed up with some drug dealer.
I'm gonna kill these guys.
Really?
What makes you think you can kill a man?
I read it. A crime novel.
So Cold Pursuit is the trailer that I just played. It's 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. You know what? This is kind of interesting. It was at 92 or 93% last week when I first put together these show notes. But then over the course of the week, it started going down. So now it's at 73%. It dropped 20% with the Liam Neeson controversy.
Wait, was it? I thought
it wasn't out, but there was pre-screenings, and so there was enough critical reviews that they could give it a score.
And you said in Twitter that you were upset about the Liam Neeson controversy. What was it? I missed that.
Yeah, I said that it cast a shadow on my enjoyment of the movie. So I'm not totally, let me summarize what I know about the controversy, and then Ben, if you know more, you can fill me in. So Liam Neeson, I guess in doing promotion for the movie, he did an interview where he said several years ago, a few decades ago, he had learned that one of his friends was raped and was raped by a black person, a black man. And so he was so angry that for a week he was walking around the city with a crowbar or some kind of stick or something, looking for a confrontation with a black person. And he told it in a way where I think his message was supposed to be, I've grown as a person, I guess, and maybe I've experienced immaturity in my own life. But a lot of people were saying, well, that's, you're racist, basically, because one black man did something wrong. And so you were trying to start a fight with any black man as though any other black right. man could be responsible for what happened. And that's basically racism when you take.
Yeah. And that would also be a hate crime, how we define it now.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
it wasn't so much he was looking for revenge. He was just going to, I mean, from what you described, that's my understanding of it. I don't know that there's too much to talk about this, but it's an interesting, it's like a life story where, and I said this on Twitter. Well, of course, I'm not going to defend him saying that, but I feel like if there were a movie about that event in his life where it was totally in context and you had the full situation, like that scene in a movie would not be controversial, I don't think. Because I'm sure what would happen after that is he would realize what an idiot he was.
Okay, Cold Pursuit, starring Liam Neeson, 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, it was because of the controversy with Liam Neeson,
yep.
where he was being racist, according to many people. But Liam Neeson is defending himself, saying he's grown from. I can kind of see it both ways. I wish that news had come like 2 weeks later instead of right when the movie came out, because it did really impact my enjoyment of the movie. What did you guys think of the movie?
I saw the movie and it left me wondering what just happened. And I will say that I saw Taken and I was worried that it would be just like Taken. And surprisingly, it wasn't. It was different enough that I found myself getting lost in the movie, you know. But do you want a review or my overall feelings?
Well, I actually want a review with no spoilers.
Okay, so it was like a comedy go get revenge movie, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that surprised me that it was a comedy, because I won't spoil anything, but the end left me thinking it was a total comedy.
I posted a comment about that on Twitter.
It was
Did you see that?
Yeah. It felt like something me and my friend Travis, we used to have this joke, what does a duck stand for so it won't fall down? We used to laugh our heads off. It kind of felt like that, like some teenager just wrote the last scene.
Well, that scene actually felt like it clashed with the tone of the rest of the movie to me.
It made no sense.
It was so bizarre. Yeah.
It was like a tap dance class, and then all of a sudden, Peyton Manning comes out and shows you how to throw the football.
So, in fact, once we get to spoilers, I do want to see if we can reconstruct the ending and figure out what actually happened and what it means. But let me just give a summary of the premise and the plot. So, Liam Neeson is a snowplow driver in a city near Denver, 3 hours away from Denver, Colorado, called Kehoe.
But it's a mythical city because we couldn't find it.
Yeah, I've looked on maps like 7 times.
And they have a waterfall that looks like it's like from 4 times bigger than Niagara Falls.
But think of Park City. This is basically what the city is.
It looks like Park City.
It's like a ski town for like rich yuppie people to go.
Park City.
Yeah, Park City. And it looked really cool in the movie. I was like, where is this place? I want to go there. Anyway, so he drives snow plows and his son gets mixed up with, his son must be like 20 to 25 years old. He gets mixed up with some drug dealers.
He's still borrowing his mom's car. So anyway.
Yeah. And he crosses the drug dealer somehow. I think, did he not pay him back?
They stole some of his drugs. And his friend.
Oh, okay. So him and his friend stole some drugs. So then the drug dealers, this is all in the preview, by the way. So the drug dealers kill him. And this is also in the preview. Liam Neeson finds out all the way up. Well, I don't want to spoil it, but he starts scoping out
He follows the trail of like the leftover trails of who did it.
Okay, should we move to spoilers for Cold Pursuit?
Yeah, let's do.
The rest of this conversation has been moved to the back of the episode for the spoiler section. Now let's talk about the Lego Movie 2, the second part.
You mind if I save your life?
Not at all.
The name's Rex Danger Vest. This is my ship.
Are those dinosaurs?
What are you doing in space?
Aliens kidnapped my friends. I'm going to get them back.
That planet is ruled by an alien queen.
I'm a queen, whatever I would not be.
The talking horse?
I could change my form if this makes you uncomfortable.
Hey, guys.
No, go back. The horse was much more palatable.
Okay, I just played the trailer for the Lego Movie 2, the second part. It's 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. What did you guys think?
I was let down. I just didn't think it was funny. No, sorry, I didn't think it was fun.
Did you like the first one?
Yeah. Oh, I really liked the first one. And for all of the movies I saw this week, I was the most excited about this one.
I didn't feel like it was that much different from the first one. Definitely not in tone. I felt like this had the same quantity of jokes and quality of jokes. The story was just about as compelling. Like, what made you not like this one and like the first one?
Well, I did not.
Because I feel like I liked this one a little more than the first one.
I didn't dislike it. The writing was great. The story was great. I actually really love how they did the story, but it just was not, it wasn't fun. Like, for example, the way it started out, I was expecting them to be playing that song, Everything is Awesome.
Yeah.
And they played this like super slow, like downer version of it.
Yeah.
About half hour into the movie, I just kept thinking, this just isn't right. Like, what's going on? And I think the music was just wrong the whole time. The music was too downer. It just wasn't fun. And there were a lot of times where I felt like this music is just wrong. Like, I don't know why they chose this music or this song. I didn't like it. I didn't like the music.
So did you, like, one thing I noticed that, I don't know if this happened in the first one, but it felt like there were, like, a lot of musical parts.
Yeah.
Like show tunes, where they would, like, sing and dance in this one. Is that what you were talking about with the music?
Yeah, I was hoping for, like, an upbeat, fun movie. Like, you know, that Everything is Awesome. Like, he's singing, yeah, running through the city, like, kind of being, yeah, his quirky self where, like, you can't bring him down.
Yeah. This had a darker tone, huh?
Yeah, after I saw it, I thought, man, the preview just was so much more fun. So I rewatched the preview afterwards last night. The preview was great. I just feel like the preview was this fun thing, and the movie was not that fun. The writing was really good. And also,
yeah,
like,
the writing was very clever. Fast. I couldn't keep up with the jokes. Like, they were,
yeah,
they, like, you, once one joke hit me, I had already missed two of them. What, trying to think about the first one, they were just flying so fast.
And there were a lot. There was so much laughing in the theater. There'd be a joke, and people laugh so long you couldn't even hear what the next things that were said.
Yeah, Ben, I really actually liked the musical parts, especially the one. The most memorable one is when Princess Whatevra Wanabi sings a song about how Batman's not really her type. Uh-huh. She really likes guys that wear tights and wear red capes.
I used to wear tights.
Because Batman is like, I'm bachelor. I'm not going to get, like, he doesn't, uh-huh, want to get married. He's like single and everything. But the minute she mentions, like, the minute she does that musical, like, song and dance about Superman, he is immediately like, marry me. You must marry me. I'm so much better than Superman.
Yeah, that was funny. He's so self-conscious about, well, he's in this, like, unofficial war with Superman about who's, like,
yeah,
who's better.
And Will Arnett's deep, raspy voice is so perfect for Batman. Like, I feel like he should be the live-action Batman, don't you think? He would be so much better than Ben. I mean, Ben Affleck, I think, is decent. But Will Arnett would add a dimension that would be so much better,
yeah,
for Batman.
Yeah, but only in an ironic way. Like, he couldn't be a serious, yeah, Batman.
I bet he could.
Well, in the beginning of the movie, well, I guess I don't want to spoil that. I really loved how the movie, you felt like it was the kids playing with the toys. And they kept going back to show what the kids were doing and how that related to the scene that was going on. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. There was a theme. So the theme of the first movie was this is funny, Andy. We talk about movies bleeding into each other. This seemed a lot like Serenity, because in Serenity, the little boy is playing a game and you're seeing the manifestation in the movie with the characters. That's kind of the same thing here, where you're seeing this narrative develop with the Legos, but it's really a manifestation of what's happening with the little boy and his sister. But in the first movie, the theme was because there's Lord Business and the Craggle, which was the crazy glue. And it was like the little boy wanted to play with his dad's Legos and play with his dad. But this time the tension is between in real life, the narrative that's kind of like overshadowing the whole plot is the little sister wants to play with her with the boy from the first movie, the older boy. And so there's this marriage supposedly between Batman, who represents the boy's toys, and then Whatevra Wanabi, which is like the little sister's toys, and in their marriage supposedly will bring both of them together, and it would symbolize the little boy playing with his little sister, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. Did I interpret
it
that all?
And I love how you could totally see that when they're in their little Lego world, because like the star and the alien, those were all the, yeah, little girl's toys. They were more, yeah, simplistic, where a little kid, uh-huh, younger child would have put them together.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just so cool how they did it. And like as the the queen, whatever, she'd always change form. It was, I could just see the little girl. Her name is
whatever I want to be.
I could see the
whatever
girl.
Whatever I want to be.
You know, those were the only Legos she could play with, and she would make different things out of them.
Yeah. I did like that they brought in, at the very beginning of the movie, when the little girl was like a toddler, they brought in those big Lego bricks.
Oh, yeah.
Like those bigger ones.
They're humongous.
So, I do agree with you, Ben, that the tone of this one was a lot darker than the first one. So they do like a downer version of Everything is Awesome. And then I think with Rex Danger Vest, I don't want to spoil it or anything, but he turns out to add a little bit of a more, just like a darker tone to the movie towards the end.
Yeah. And in the preview, I kept getting confused because in the preview when he shows up, I thought it was Master Chief from Halo. Because he got the green suit, he has the helmet on. And then even though I saw the preview and it realized it wasn't Master Chief, I just couldn't. Every time I saw him, I thought, oh, it's Master Chief. And I was disappointed.
Yeah, he was still a fun character. Yeah. I put on Twitter Team Rex Danger Vest, like between him and Emmett, because they're basically like, you know, mirrors of each other. I thought he was funny, but he was definitely like, he had kind of a dark, sinister, not sinister, sorry. He had kind of a dark, depressing story arc.
Well, I love his bio of himself as like everything awesome that I wanted to be when I was nine. Like I want to be a cowboy. He's like an Indiana Jones, but add all of these other things on top.
Yeah. I thought it was cool. I posted this on Twitter. I thought it was cool that when we went in at the theater, they gave each one of my kids a little pack of Legos.
Yeah.
And I swear those packs of Legos would be like $5 each. And I don't know what I was paying for those seats, but it wasn't like a ton more than $5 a piece.
Yeah. I feel ripped off because...
Oh, you didn't get that?
I did not. In the theater I was doing it at, you had to buy your ticket on opening day, but I bought my tickets like a few days before.
Oh, okay.
So I'm...
So I wonder if that was like
I'm going to tweet promotion. An angrily worded tweet about that.
I thought that was the movie studio doing that, but do you think that was the theater or did they
I'm not sure... I don't know, but I have an app for one of the theaters that I go to where I got it. And it sent me this little notification yesterday afternoon about, oh, if you buy a ticket, we'll give you these Legos.
Yeah.
How did your kids like it?
The movie or the Legos?
The movie.
I think they liked the movie more than I did. I thought the movie was okay, but I think my kids really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a kind of movie where I need to rent it. So every time they do a crack, I can pause it and try and understand the joke and then resume.
Yeah. A lot of those jokes needed explanation because they're about current events or like they're talking about the DC universe and oh, so-and-so was it licensed for the whatever. I'm like, wait, what?
Right. Marvel didn't return our calls. No, was it? Yeah. Marvel. Yeah. There was a lot of pop culture reference.
There were so many jokes and references that were self-aware about, they were totally aware they were in a movie talking about other franchises. And then there were these other jokes that kept breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. You mean when, so there was a scene where Emmett and Rex Danger Vest are fighting, but instead of being like animated Legos, they're like real life Legos just kind of bumping into each other. And then he says something like, we're just an expression of an adolescent's imagination or something like that. Did you
catch maybe what he said? Have to get in spoilers on this.
Okay, should we move to spoilers?
Yeah.
The rest of this conversation has been moved to the back of the episode for the spoiler section. Okay, let's move on to the next new release this week, The Prodigy.
Nurturing genius.
He's our little prodigy.
Miles isn't wired like other kids.
His intelligence is off the charts. I don't have an exact score, but it'll be very high.
He's special.
Mommy? What's wrong with me?
The Prodigy. I didn't see it. Did anybody see it?
I did not. I saw the trailer.
Okay. We already commented on the trailer. I didn't see it. Maybe I'll catch up on it later.
I did not see it. The preview made it look really scary. I want to see this one. Let's talk about it next week because I want to see it and I didn't have a chance yet.
I don't know if I want to see it. It's 45% on Rotten Tomatoes. There's nothing in the trailer that made me want to see it, to be honest.
Like the dad says, I don't feel safe in my house with my own son. That was...
Was it the dad? I couldn't make that out. But there is a scene where a man says, I don't feel safe with him in the house, but I didn't know who it was.
Well, it's a scary premise. Like this little innocent kid is... Ooh, it could be really good.
Yeah, I'm just curious, what does he do that freaks everybody out? Because they don't show it in the preview.
I'll bet he pulls legs off grasshoppers.
That might be true. I bet that's how they lead up to it. Okay, we've just discussed The Prodigy. The fourth new movie out in wide release, What Men Want.
Oh, hello. Welcome back, Miss Davis.
Thank God this one didn't die on me. Starting today, no more drinking at work.
Hey, that's too much information.
I didn't say anything.
I feel weird after last night.
Yeah, that's what happens when tequila meets desperation.
Okay, stop saying things you shouldn't be saying to your boss.
Holy crap, can you hear my inner thoughts?
I can hear your inner thoughts! Ah!
I just played the trailer for What Men Want. I saw this today. Did either of you guys see it?
Yeah, I saw it last night.
What did you think, Ben?
I tweeted some things. I wrote some angry worded, what is it? Some angry worded tweets.
You did? I didn't see your tweets.
Not anger. I just the main character, the protagonist is it Taraji Henson? Taraji? I don't know how to pronounce her name. Didn't like the
movie. I recognize her from Karate Kid with Jaden Smith. The most recent one that came out. She was the mom when they traveled to China. That's the only film I've seen her in that I recognize her from. Taraji Henson. Yeah, I don't know how to say her name.
The movie was true to the preview. Like the preview gave you a good sense of what to expect, like with her personality, the scenarios.
I swear I laughed more in the preview than I did in the actual movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In the movie, I was like, I thought this was going to be so fun. You made it look so fun. Like, there was even some funny clips in the preview that were not in the actual movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when the guy's like, that cloud you're walking through, that's my fart.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They didn't even put that in the movie. I was like, hey, what? Like, that was a good line. What's going on?
I feel like, you know, I was expecting, well, this is a remake of that What Women Want movie from, 1990, I think that came out.
With Dennis Quaid?
No.
Oh, it's not Dennis Quaid? I thought it was.
It's the guy from Braveheart, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm looking it up. Yeah, Mel Gibson. You're right. Yeah, I don't know why I thought Dennis Quaid. Yeah, Mel Gibson.
So I thought, oh, cool. I think the premise is really good because, you know, they're taking a lot of movies like what they do with Spider-Man. They're going to introduce women and they're going to show, like in Star Wars, they introduce a woman in a different role. So I thought it was an opportunity to do something interesting or explore something there. And, you know, it was a missed opportunity. And then, you know, partway through the movie, her character, she just was not a good person. Like, I believe everyone should be treated with dignity and respect. And she did neither of those to anyone. The way she like flaps her arms in people's faces, like, get out of my face. And like the way she gives people dirty looks, and she didn't respect anyone. She was super selfish. And it was her going through her world, just being rude to everybody. And meanwhile, the place she works at is like this boys club where they're competing and it's mostly men.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's holding her own, but she's not getting respect, which I think is a really cool premise. But
yes.
As a person, she was just, to me, she was a horrible person.
Yeah, you nailed what I was going to say. I felt like this had such a great premise. Like this idea of a woman living in a man's world, trying to compete with men in the workplace, and then being able to read men's thoughts.
Yeah.
That was such a great premise. It was such a great idea. It's so much better than the premise to What Women Want, because it's less interesting for a man, because for women, especially women in the workplace where they're trying to break the glass ceiling, it was such a good setup. And so once she finally gets her ability to read men's thoughts, she doesn't do anything redeeming with it.
Right.
All she does is figures out how to be better in bed by reading the thoughts of her lover or something.
Yeah, and she used it to further manipulation. Like, she manipulated people, and she used this as another tool to be better at it.
Oh, and for sure, she does, you know, she gets to the top of her game in the business. She becomes partner. She starts her own firm. So she has this, like, professional success with it. But I left thinking, well, what was the message? Like, I didn't get any inspiring message out of this movie.
No, not at all. I just, the whole time I was not rooting for her about three quarters of the way through. And that was weird for the protagonist. I was not on her side. And like her boyfriend, I'm like, get out now, bud, get out now. And he kept like staying.
Yeah, he seemed like such a good guy. And it could have made some poignant commentary on women, you know?
Yeah.
On women in the workplace, women's rights, the ability for women to to be professionally successful, but it didn't. It did. I mean, it nodded to it for sure. I guess the beginning of the premise, she gets passed over because she's a woman. And then there's a scene, I hope this isn't spoiling anything, but there's a scene later where her boss tells her that he wouldn't fire her because of the Me Too movement, because she's a woman. And not just that, but also because she's black.
I don't know so that they, he they, actually said that, though.
Yeah, he did.
I thought he said something, and for other reasons. And she was speculating, and he refused to answer.
Okay. And what was weird about that scene is she could read his thoughts, but she, like, there were, you didn't get any of his thoughts there, because she still had the power at that point in the movie. Anyway, yeah, I agree with you, Ben. It could have been, it could have had a great message. It could have been thought-provoking in addition to being funny. It was barely funny. Like, I don't think it was even as funny as the trailer, and it had no other redeeming aspect. There was no overarching message that was inspiring or thought-provoking. It just didn't.
Right.
It could have done so much more. So I felt like you did. It was a missed opportunity.
Well, it also muddied the waters of this concept in this, well, this actual scenario that happens. There's like the wage gap between men and women, which is a real thing. You know, there's a complaint many, I've heard women say where, you know, if they're strong or assertive, they're labeled as
a bitch. Oh.
Yeah, we're going to have to beep that out for certain sensibilities.
Sorry, Brooke and Aaron, I'm so sorry I used that word. It just means a female dog, so. And I'm sure that word's in the Bible somewhere.
It muddied the waters on those real issues because she wasn't a great person who was also doing great things at her job. She was a horrible person. And so you know, I wasn't rooting for her because she was a bad person. I don't care about that other stuff. She was so selfish. Like, even her little assistant who helps her out with everything, does everything for her, she treats him like trash.
You said something, Seth, that was really, I've been thinking about the whole time you've said this, and this is just a question I would pose. We talked a lot about these things in art school. Maybe it wasn't art school, but anyway, you said that there was nothing redeeming about, there was no inspiration or redeeming about the movie. Does a movie have to have that to be successful? Do you know what I mean? Does it have to have something that gives you some moral, like a kid's book? A kid's book always teaches you something, but does a piece of film or have to have something like that?
Well, I said it didn't have any redeeming qualities, or that's what I meant to say. So it doesn't have to be an inspiring message, but it has to have some redeeming quality. If it makes me laugh really hard, that's a redeeming quality. Okay. If it makes me cry, that's a redeeming quality. It has a thought-provoking message, it redeems it. But there was nothing here to redeem the movie to make me forgive it for all the faults it had.
And that wasn't like me trying to teach you. I was just honestly wondering, because I saw a movie like that this week where I didn't want to be like anything of any of the characters, but I still appreciated the movie, you know. Anyway.
Can we move to spoilers?
Yeah. Okay. So we just discussed What Men Want, the non-spoiler. The rest of this conversation has been moved to the back of the episode for the spoiler section. Coming next week, Alita Battle Angel.
Does it bother you that I'm not completely human?
You are the most human person I have ever met.
Didn't I tell you to be home before dark?
I just lost track of time.
Alita,
we have to be responsible. You are someone very special.
Hey, kid.
Not just a teenage girl.
Hey, what's your problem?
You can't remember.
What do you mean?
Doc found you in the scrapyard. So you must be from up there.
And I'm just an insignificant girl.
That's what they want you to think.
I just played the trailer for Alita Battle Angel. And by the way, this is, let me see. Okay, it was rated 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm really excited for this, though, still. It looks, first of all, it's a James Cameron's written movie, which he's done the two highest grossing movies of all time, which are Titanic and Avatar.
Really?
But he didn't direct this.
That's the guy that wrote it?
He wrote it, yeah. James Cameron. It does look really interesting. She's like this robot with like giant eyes. So it does look like an interesting world.
Yeah, it's like a human brain inside a robot body.
Yeah. Or is it a human brain?
In the preview, I think he says your brain is very much human, or your something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But it looks really cool. Yeah, and she looks like her eyes are too big to be for a person. It looks really cool. My only complaint is the title of it.
Why? I like the title. What don't you like about the title?
I don't know. Battle Angel. It just sounds stupid.
Oh, yeah. It does sound kind of a little bit too hokey, huh? Like it's like anime. It's like super
maybe
Broly.
Maybe she's like a stripper or something?
No, it's like it reminds me of, you know, the worst apartment complexes have the nicest names.
Yeah.
So
that's true. That's true. It's like compensating.
Much.
Yeah. The Chateau, like some French name.
Yeah.
And it's like a Motel 6 once you get in.
Like on Green Book?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like on Green Book. Okay, so this was at 53% on Rotten Tomatoes last week. It's now at 60%. I don't know if it's been released worldwide yet. I don't know where these these reviews are aggregated from, but it has gone up. That's not deterring me yet. It just looks so interesting. I mean,
yeah.
The preview, I've been looking forward to this movie for months because the preview looked so interesting.
Yeah, same here. And did you ever see her in Game of Thrones?
She's from Game of Thrones?
I could be wrong. I think she's the young girl who...
Her name is Rosa Salazar. I don't recognize her, and I've seen all the Game of Thrones.
So is this...
Oh, that's not... I thought she was the girl who gets revenge on everyone, and she like goes to the house of the... Of Thrones, like, yeah, she's killing all these people. She's like an assassin.
Arya Stark?
Yeah.
No,
is that
it's
her?
Not the same actor. No,
it's not. Oh my goodness. I thought it was a... Okay.
But you know the Mahershala Ali from Green Book? He's in this.
I like him.
I don't know what... he was great in Green Book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if he's... He's like a...
It looks like
he's like a mentor.
It looks like an animated... Is it animated? Because you guys are talking about actual people.
Yeah, it looks like... It's a lot of CGI.
Yeah, so it is... It's live action, but there are CG characters, like Alita.
Okay.
And so Rosa Salazar does a perform... Just like... I don't know if you've watched behind the scenes for Avatar, where... Because they have... I can't remember those actors' names in Avatar. But they just put these... They have them do the performance, but then they cover it with CGI.
Kind of like Smeagol in Lord of the Rings. Smeagol.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. I think the technology has gotten... It has to have gotten better since then, though, like even better. And this does seem to be something James Cameron enjoys, like 3D movies and then this... CG animation of live action characters. Okay, I'm really excited for that. That was Battle Angel. The next movie coming out in wide release next week is Happy Death Day to You.
Dude, help. I am tripping right now. I feel like I've totally lived through this day already.
Deja vu?
Yes.
The day reset when you died, right?
Yeah.
I might be able to help with that. I died 11 times.
I was stuck reliving the same day over and over again until someone wearing a baby mask murdered me on the night of my birthday. Turns out it was my roommate, Lori. I kicked her crazy out a window and killed her, which broke the loop.
I saw the original of this, which was really fun to watch. And this second one looks really fun, too. I'm actually excited for this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to be busy next weekend.
I am, too. And I went back and I wanted to watch the preview for the first one that came out. And the previews are so similar, I'm not sure which is which.
Yeah. Well, they do cover a lot of the same, because this is basically, at least the last one was a Groundhog Day.
Right. It looks like it's going to be the same premise, but the following year. I mean, I'm really excited to see it. I just thought that was funny because I saw the preview. I'm like, oh, I want to see the preview for the first one. Yeah. And I found it. And I'm like, I think that was the preview, like a different version of the same preview.
Did you see this, the first one, Ben?
No.
Oh, I did. You should watch it before you see the sequel. It was fun. It's scary. It's a little bit horror, but it's really fun.
I have to say that to see this movie would step a lot of out of my comfort zone. I would never see this movie if I wasn't doing the podcast.
Really?
So okay. It's going to be a challenge for me. I got to go see it.
Well, nobody's forcing you.
Because it's scary?
No. Yeah, it's just not my... Anyway, I'm just a little nervous to see it.
Because it's scary.
Yeah, it looks
it's
scary.
Like a slasher.
Yeah, I don't go see those movies, so I'm a little nervous.
I think all the movies that follow the Groundhog Day,
Edge of
like,
Tomorrow. This is more like Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow was so good.
Yeah.
When you say Groundhog Day, they just repeat themselves over
where
and
they
over.
They repeat their experiences.
Andy, you didn't see Edge of Tomorrow?
No, I don't generally see movies like this. I did see Green.
Well, Edge of Tomorrow is more, it's like an action movie with Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt.
Well, I did see Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day?
That was a joke. I saw Groundhog Day.
Okay, that is Happy Death Day to you. The third movie coming out in wide release next week, there's only three, is Isn't It Romantic?
I think I might be going crazy.
I hit my head really hard and I woke up in this alternate universe.
And now I have a gay sidekick who's setting gay rights back like 100 years.
I love working the legs.
Jesus! And guys looking me in the eyes.
You're quite beguiling, aren't you?
Are you feeling what I'm feeling?
No!
Oh my God.
I think I'm trapped in a... My life's become a mother... romantic comedy! And it's PG-13!
I just played the trailer for Isn't It Romantic.
I have to say I'm really excited about her. And if I talk at all about the movie The Destroyer that I saw, there's a strong parallel that I see with these two movies.
What? Oh, Isn't really? It Romantic?
Okay. Yes. So, in a very odd way, and I'll get to it.
Isn't It Romantic is with Rebel Wilson. She's Fat Amy from Pitch Perfect. She is so funny. She is one of the funniest actors I've seen.
She's incredible.
And then Adam Devine is in. He's also from Pitch Perfect. So you've already seen their chemistry because they are lovers in Pitch Perfect. They're kind of, yeah, basically lovers.
Oh,
yeah.
And then the babe from, what's her name? Pyrinka Chopra?
Priyanka Chopra.
She's on this other show I watched. What is it? Oh, I can't think of it. It's a TV show.
And Liam Hemsworth, which is really funny because, I don't know, it's kind of a mismatch because Liam Hemsworth is like the epitome of a good-looking male.
And she's that for a female.
Rebel Wilson? Oh, Priyanka Chopra. No, but he's a love interest for Rebel Wilson, who's Fat Amy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
and so they're totally a mismatch, which is kind of funny because she's like living in romantic comedy.
Funny for him.
This preview reminds me a lot of I Feel Pretty, and I'm hoping that it's going to be as funny as that movie was.
I have a lot of faith in Rebel Wilson, so I'm going to go in ready to laugh. Hopefully she delivers.
I Feel Pretty. Do any of you guys feel insecure in a swimsuit? In that I Feel Pretty when she does the bikini?
Yeah.
The bikini.
Oh, and she's like so confident.
Yeah, I loved it.
I know. It is cool.
That movie is so funny.
To see anybody, though, that looks like they're comfortable
in their own skin and they're
Do you know, remember Chris Farley, how he took off his shirt and danced?
In that Chippendale movie?
Yeah. It was so funny. Yeah. And it was partly funny because he was so confident. But then when you watch the biography of him, you learn that he was actually insecure, that people were laughing at him because he was fat. And I was like, oh my gosh, because what was so funny is he seemed so confident.
Right.
And he was fat.
Yeah. I never, ever laughed at him because he was fat. I just laughed at him because it was so funny.
Well, it was part of it was that he was fat, but so confident about it.
Yeah, I mean, but I wasn't like thinking, oh, I'm so embarrassed. I wasn't thinking, I feel so embarrassed for Chris Farley.
Yeah,
I thought,
no.
Oh, what a bad.
Yeah, you admired him. And that's how it was with Amy Schumer when she was in the bikini contest. Because you're like she doesn't look as good as the other girls. Oh, that hurts my ears.
And she has all of the confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was so funny.
Andy's phone alarm is going off.
That's my date alarm.
Are you leaving?
No. It's the alarm was going off in our ears.
Oh, okay. Should we move on?
Okay, that was Isn't It Romantic? And now it's time for the tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week. So there are a lot of tweets that I would love to go and talk about because we could spend so much time because, I mean, I love making jokes on Twitter and I love, like, I'm having so much fun. So there was this tweet which... you really have to see the video, but I'm going to try to describe it. And I just can't stop laughing when I hear it. So, you guys probably saw this. Did you guys see Star Wars, The Last Jedi?
Yeah, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's been out a few years. So there's this scene.
Oh, The Last Jedi. I'm sorry. That's the latest. That was episode 8, right? That's the latest one that came out?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, not Return of the Jedi. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking Return of the Jedi, but you're talking about the one.
Yeah, it's the Last Jedi. So let me explain the backstory and then I'll get to the tweet. So someone, like a sound engineer, they tweeted a clip from Star Wars, the Last Jedi. And if you remember the movie, there's a scene in the movie where Kylo Ren... He's the bad guy. He's like Darth Vader's grandson. And then Rey is the girl who's protagonist, and she's like training to be a Jedi. So those two are in Snoke's throne room. And Snoke is like the evil Sith Lord, or I don't know what he is. He's like the big bad guy. So the visuals, anyways, Snoke is like this old man, evil. He looks like a withered raisin. It's
like 1,000 years old.
Yeah. And he's sitting in a throne in the middle of a, like this huge empty room. So like the visuals are really stark. So the room's just all red and he has this throne in the middle. And to the sides of him are these red stormtroopers. I think they're called Supreme Imperial Guards, whatever. So This is like this like really intense part of the movie. Rey is trying to turn Kylo Ren to the light side. And Snoke is trying to get Kylo Ren to commit to the bad side, the dark side. And so anyway, in the situation, Rey is in this helpless position, like Snoke got her in this grip and she's trapped there. And Kylo Ren is standing there with his lightsaber pointed at her, like unsheathed. And, you know, Snoke is like, fulfill your destiny. And this is part of you. He's like, it's a really tense spot because like she's about to get assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And so what ends up happening is Kylo Ren ends up betraying Snoke and saving, he ends up saving
Rey.
And so he assassinates Snoke. The lightsaber goes flying across the room and Rey grabs it. And then like the Star Wars music comes in. It's like, dun, 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 dun. And then they look at each other like, okay, now we got to battle these red Imperial guards. And so they go back to back and start like their little battle. Like the, you know, so it's like this really intense moment. The Star Wars movie, the music is going. And then, you know, then you hear the lightsaber. Doo, doo, doo. Okay, so this is like an intense moment of the movie. And so somebody took, like, right when that scene ends and Rey grabs the lightsaber, they added different music. They grab the sword. They're looking at each other. They go back to back. And the beat matches up with how they're like hitting their sword.
Oh, really? Lightsabers. You keep saying swords.
Lightsabers. Sorry.
I think the Star Wars beats are
forgive. Yeah, forgive me. That is a clip. It's so dumb. Like, but it's like a minute and a half, and I watched the whole thing, and then I watched it again, and then I watched it again. That's one of the tweets I retweeted, and it's on our feed.
Oh, I didn't even see that one. That's funny. Okay. Okay. That's Tweet of the Week. Okay. Now we're going to do a mini review of The Destroyer starring Nicole Kidman.
So I took a date to a movie this week. I had already seen all the top movies in the box office. At one point in our text conversation, she thought I sent her all the movies we could see that I hadn't seen. Uh-huh. And she says, are you taking me to a dollar movie? I was like, no, I would never do that. Because I honestly didn't know they were the dollar movie, but I felt ashamed.
Was it a dollar movie?
Well, I sent her like 20 videos to choose from because I had already seen all the top box office movies that were in the theater. Anyway, she chose a movie. We didn't see it, but we ended up choosing Destroyer. And I would say to you two, I don't know if you guys have ever felt this way, but I sometimes feel ashamed, and this will lead into what I'm going to get to about the story. Sometimes I do something that I should or shouldn't feel ashamed about, but I often think about, like, what if my mom was picturing me doing this?
Right.
And she would just picture me as, like, this little blonde 5-year-old boy. You know, I used to be that, you know, and now I'm this fallen 40-year-old guy, whatever. But it reminded me of another experience. I was with a friend, and this gets to the movie. The reason I bring up the kid is sometimes there's this beauty about kids that it's they're fresh, they're young, their whole life ahead of them. And sometimes even like late teens and early 20 kids have that as well. And one day my friend walks into our apartment with these girls there, and he's blonde and really handsome, and he takes his shirt off, and he looks like a Greek god. But what he says is like, oh my gosh, guys, before he takes his shirt off, I've got a little bump on my chest. It looks like a tumor's growing. And he takes off his shirt and he's like rippling muscles. And we were just like, oh my gosh, he just wanted to show off his muscles. So a few years later, I saw him, and his face was bloated. He was missing teeth, and his skin was weathered, and he looked like 30 years older, and it had only been like 7 years. But it has a lot to do with the movie, is because I grew up. So The Destroyer is about it kind of doesn't have a plot to me that is very believable or interesting, but it's not that remarkable. It you kind of hope that it's going to be this crime, you know, with those movies with the cop that discovers everything and solves everything. But what it ends up being, it's not remarkable for the story, but what's remarkable is if you followed Nicole Kidman's career. Like, I remember watching her in 1992 in Far and Away when she was 25. She's got these blue eyes and just beautiful red hair. She's just at the beginning of her career, and then you just kind of watch her as she even ages now, and she's amazing in everything she does, dancing, film. So I went to this movie, and it starts out with these cops, you know, at a murder scene. And I see this haggard old lady, that wrinkled face that looks like she's worn out. Like, kind of sometimes you see people on the side of the road that are begging for money, and you try not to make eye contact with them on the side of the road. That's kind of what she looked like. And it was so disturbing, because that's not who I see her as. And I didn't even know it was her. And the girl I was with said, that's Nicole Kidman. And so basically it's a story about revenge and deep undercover, starting out kind of naive, like I talked about as a kid, where they're these naive undercover cops and they're going over their cover story. And I'm not supposed to
spoil it.
I won't spoil it.
Yeah, don't spoil
it. I'll just say that it has an amazing juxtaposition of that idea of someone that's young and just fresh and in the prime of their life, and then they show her as this haggard, quite frankly ugly lady that's going on a path that's going to only lead to death. And I guess the main thing of the movie, the story was forgettable, but that vision of her is incredible, to see her looking like that.
She's almost unrecognizable.
I didn't know it was
so
her.
Would you recommend this movie?
I would never watch it again, but I will never forget it. And so, yes, I would say, yes, you got to watch it, because it's one of those ones like we talked about, where is there something redeeming about it, or is it actually get a good message? It really kind of leaves you feeling empty, but I still think you should see it.
It's 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. Do you think that's about right, or would you rate it higher or lower?
I think that's about right. I mean, I'm a little picky in the story. I felt like it was a little bit, I would say about right. But I guess the thing that I came away from it thinking is that, you know, you see those kids on the side of the street, or that old lady that has missing her teeth, and you're like, what happened? But I feel like after I watched that, I'm like, I'm not too many decisions away from looking like Nicole Kidman. Anyway, I recommend.
This week, or last week, I saw How to Train Your Dragon 3. So I'm going to just do a really quick mini review. So first off, this is one, if you've seen the previous two, you got to see this one. It's along the same lines. It's funny. It's fun. The kids loved it. And there is a scene where they show in the preview where the dragon's trying to woo the white fury dragon.
Yeah.
It is so funny. They show a 2 or 3 second clip in the preview, but he spends 4 minutes doing these little funny dances and mating dances, or it is so funny. So I definitely take your kids, and there were a lot of adults crying at the end. The ending is really sweet. So mini Kleenex.
I love all of those movies. It was better than Lego Movie 2. Right?
Yeah, I enjoyed it more. I think with Lego Movie 2, I just got to see it again where I don't have the audience laughing over the dialogue.
I've cried in all the Dragon movies.
Oh, gee. So.
And I've bought them all on.
I've never seen a dragon movie, so this will challenge. Oh.
They seem like Pixar movies because they're so well done, but they're DreamWorks.
Well, Pixar's probably going to buy DreamWorks now.
Well, Disney already bought Pixar, but it wouldn't surprise me if they bought. DreamWorks was their main competitor in the beginning of the 2000s. Okay, so this is the end of our spoiler-free section. Thanks for listening to TWIM.
Can I say one thing before you finish? Are those two movies we just reviewed, do you think they'll be in the top 10 eventually? Because I don't think Destroyer was...
How to Train Your Dragon 3? Yeah. Well, definitely. That'll be number one.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. The Destroyer, I think time has passed. Even if they do a wider release, I think it's too old.
Okay, just
because that one's been out for a while. Okay, this is the end of our spoiler-free section. Thank you for listening to TWIM. The two things that help us most are subscribing and rating our podcast. If you want to contact us, you can reach us on Twitter at TWIM Weekly, or just search for This Week in Movies and find the one that looks like us out of the four results you get. That's us.
All of us are bald.
But you can't see our pictures on Twitter. So oh. We should put them on there, though. We might as well. We are now beginning our deep dive discussion portion of the show, which will include spoilers for the following movies. The Lego Movie 2, Cold Pursuit, What Men Want. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, stop listening here. I don't think we'll do the spoilers in that order exactly, but those are the three we're going to do.
You haven't seen it yet? You're going to love it.
Stop spoiling it, you vile woman!
Great. Now I know everything. I don't even need to see it anymore.
Okay, so now we're going to cover spoilers for Cold Pursuit.
Every time they did that kind of like little weird thing they did when someone died and they like stopped.
They had like a their name and then their nickname would pop on the screen in all black with like either a cross.
It was like I was in this high of a movie and all of a sudden it would wake me up every time. I was like, what is
this?
You
didn't like that?
Huh?
You didn't like that?
I liked it, but it was like, it kind of was odd. I don't remember a movie like that where they stop and kind of like map out what's happening.
Yeah, it seemed like kind of like a style choice to me.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I didn't mind it though.
I didn't mind it, but I did notice it. And sometimes it was kind of cool because like, remember when they killed the Cox?
Coxman?
Walker? Coxman?
Wasn't it Coxman?
Yeah, Coxman.
Okay.
And they
wait, which one though? Because there are three of them. There's his son, there's Liam Neeson, and then his brother with the mustache.
Well, I'll tell his you brother? About the Coxman that he gets killed. You tell about
okay.
The first killings.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just like I'll keep going through the
when we get there. The I'll plot. Tell you what I want.
Okay, so Liam Neeson finds out who killed his son, like the low level drug dealer that actually did the deed, and he encounters him and punches him to death, literally with his bare hands. Wraps his body in chicken wire, throws him in the.
You forgot one part though. He's choking him, and then he thinks he's dead. And yes. He goes, and then he starts choking him again, and the whole audience laughed at that.
Wait a minute. Scene,
I'm sorry. The preview did not make me feel like it was comedy at all.
Yeah, Andy, you
were there
it
funny
was a
moments throughout it like that?
Well, the only reason I said it was a comedy because I looked at a review and it said it was a comedy. And then I started thinking about it and it, like we laughed at the very last
There were
scene.
Definitely funny parts in it. I didn't feel like it was a comedy. I felt like it was more like a thriller.
Like a thriller, like what the?
But it did have funny scenes. Yeah, that scene was pretty funny where he's trying to strangle that guy to death and the guy keeps waking him up. And it was really gory too.
Yeah. Keep going about the chicken wire.
Yeah, so this first guy he encounters, he doesn't encounter him. What's the word? He confronts him. So the first drug dealer he confronts, the first thing he does is, you know, who's the higher level guy? Like why did you do this to my son? He's like, oh, I'm just taking orders from, you know, so-and-so, Speedo, or whoever the next guy up is. So once he got the information, then he would kill him, wrap the body in chicken wire, throw it into the lake or the river.
He'd go to the top of the waterfall that was like four times bigger than Niagara Falls.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
And just roll it down the waterfall.
The scenery was really good in this. But did he roll it down the waterfall?
Yeah, he'd drop it at the top of the river and then it'd go off the water.
I thought it did.
Maybe
yeah, that might be true. I didn't catch that's what was happening. So,
the best part was when the first guy he kills like looks at his gun. He's like, you could just leave now because they're in an elevator.
Yeah.
And then like, Liam Neeson just punches him in the face.
He flashes a gun and then Liam Neeson, by the way, is 65 years old.
Wow.
Ben, we're getting lots of feedback. I don't know if you're aware of that. It's okay what you're doing, but okay.
Hairball.
So over the course of the movie, Liam Neeson basically works his way all the way to the top. The movie ends with this big action shootout piece.
Do we want to describe the different parties in the different drug?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So you think he's going to go through the whole line and kill everyone, but he gets to a certain point where he can't get up that far in the chain. And so he goes to his like cousin or brother. That's also a coxman who used to be some type of.
He used to be part one of the dealers.
One of the dealers or a gangster.
He was on the payroll for the.
Right.
For what was that guy's name? Viking? What was the head
guy's
name?
His dad. He was on the payroll for his dad, Viking's dad.
Yeah. Okay.
And back to the comedy part, his wife was hilarious.
She was.
The Chinese lady.
Yes. Oh my gosh. She was such a joy to watch.
She was so obnoxious. It was awesome.
Yeah, she was staring the biggest daggers at him.
She had a really like resting bitch face at all times.
And then in that scene where she's watching her husband, she's like doing yoga in that glass room you can see from outside. She was a presence where she didn't have to do anything, but it was funny to watch. Just seeing her was funny.
Yeah.
She wasn't cracking jokes or anything. She was just so funny.
And I guess he met her because she was stealing money from a
massage parlor
that was there. Business in the underworld, and he was sent out to kill her and
to beat her up,
and yeah. he
ended up getting married to her.
Yeah, my favorite part though is when Zeus stop. Okay, so every time someone would die, they would do that little thing on the screen.
Yeah,
and it was kind of cool though because I didn't want to see the Coxman guy die, and he's in the car and he's not backing down, he's not scared.
Yeah,
and then instead of showing him get killed, they just show his name on the screen.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. I like that.
So at the end of the movie, I was really surprised at how it ended because...
Oh, we didn't talk about the Native Americans, though.
Oh, okay. What did you want to say about him?
Well, I feel like that was a big part of it because that was how the rift started because...
Yeah, every time Liam Neeson did a killing, the drug lord Viking thought it was the Native Americans doing it. Is it weird that we still call Native Americans Indians?
Yeah, because they had that joke in there where there was an actual Indian and the American Indian kills one of the gangsters and they say to the girl that works at the desk that's a Native American, yeah, go clean up the body to the girl. And she's like, hell no, make the Indian do it. And it was like a guy from India.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That's funny.
Oh, that's clever.
But it's weird. It was like Christopher Columbus made this mistake thinking he was in India, and still, like, we're now 500 years later, we still call them Indians. Like, when do we correct ourselves and start calling them Native Americans? That's weird.
There are also a lot of other words we got to correct, like football, soccer.
Football makes no sense. Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, it might be too late to correct it. So were you going to say about the?
So he decides that it's the American Indians, the Viking, the big boss, decides it's the American Indians that have been killing his three guys. So he decides that he's going to kill one of the American Indian runners. And it happens to be the head chief of all the American Indian gangsters' son. And there starts that's kind of, because the end doesn't really quite make sense if you don't know that he was an Indian flying, I think. But
okay. Yeah, so basically what the main tension in the movie is this turf war between the Native Americans and then these locals happens right here in this little city of Kehoe, where Liam Neeson happens to be taking out these drug dealers one at a time, working his way up the chain.
And I mean, even the part where, so Liam Neeson kidnaps the son of Viking, and even the humor that came out in that was like the little boy was like, because there's this cheesy scene where he's like laying on his chest reading him a book that he just kidnapped this kid.
He's reading him a manual, or no, like a catalog of snow plowers.
and he's like,
because he didn't have anything else to read him.
And he says to Liam Neeson, I really believe in Stockholm Syndrome.
Doesn't he say, have you heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah.
The funny thing about that boy is he didn't show an iota of fear from Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson shows up to pick him up from school, to kidnap him, basically. And the little boy the whole time is like, oh, yeah, just another day in the life for me. I'm the son of this drug lord, so I'm totally comfortable. I trust you more than my dad, actually.
I actually like you more than my dad. Yeah. Let's go on a ride in the plow.
I thought the movie was going to end with him adopting the son somehow.
It kind of felt that way. But the twist was the funniest part with the snowplow and the kid and the flying Indian.
So what did you think of Viking? Because he definitely was a cartoon character. There's no rounding of his character in any way. He was just...
What do you mean cartoon character? Just like...
His character had no depth. He was just one-dimensional, super militant about nutrition, which was kind of funny. Like, he freaked out about high fructose corn syrup, and he gives his ex-wife like this menu list. He's going to have grass-fed beef and asparagus and like something else, and he's going to have the same thing for lunch and the same thing for dinner. Like, he's only going to eat this one thing.
And the gay guy that works for him secretly gives the kids cocoa
Fruity pebbles.
Fruity pebbles.
Yeah. I like that scene.
Yeah, I mean, it was, it did feel like a comedy to me.
The chemistry between Liam Neeson and the little boy was actually really good.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping for an ending where Liam Neeson somehow ended up, instead of riding off into the distance with White Bull, that he rode off into the distance with the little boy.
Yeah, it started to feel like Heidi.
Wait, like Heidi?
Have you ever seen the movie Heidi?
No.
It's about some...
Is it like Pollyanna?
It's like an old grandpa who lives in the Alps with his granddaughter and they become friends.
Oh.
But I got to say, that one part, so it's building up, and it happens to build up to the exact spot where he's kidnapped his kid. So the Native American Indians are going to find the gangsters, and the gangsters are going to find Liam Neeson, and they all meet up.
And they all kill each other.
But right before
that... And
the
police come, too.
And the police come, which they tried to make the police a big part of it, but it wasn't. I didn't get that.
Yeah, it was kind of like a B plot.
Yeah, C plot, maybe.
Yeah.
But the one part that I thought was, that I think could help us tie in the ending, was when the American Indian kid has this paraglider, and he's about to jump off a cliff and start flying, because they're goofing off waiting for the gangsters to show up. And this white, like... tourist trainer is like saying, "Hey, wait! Don't you need me to show you how to do this?" Yeah. He's like, "I've known how to fly my whole life, you white, or you white dumb, or something like that." And he jumps off the cliff and flies perfectly in the wind.
Now we're gonna have to beep that out.
Okay, Andy, I'd need to share something with you. Ben and I, after we recorded last week's episode, we sent it to my whole family and said, "Hey, listen to this episode. Ben talks about grandma and yada yada yada." And it turns out that my family was very hung up with the fact that I use very bad language. So every time I used the A word, I would put like a tone over it. But Brooke said she stopped listening to the podcast because we swore so much. And I was like, I don't even use swear words. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, Seth, I think that was the only feedback practically. I thought that was so weird. Yeah.
And Aaron said the same thing. But luckily, Ben's wife, Lisa, she thought it wasn't edgy enough and that we should swear even more.
Well... I can relate to that. Like, yeah, anyway.
So I looked up because I was like, I don't swear, but I can't think of another word to describe some of these characters without using the A word. So I looked it up in a thesaurus, and they're all like cuss words, all the like the synonyms. But then I was like, well, I can just say a-hole. I don't have to like use the...
I will say something. My brother took a Bible class at college with our particular religion. And the guy talked about how swearing really isn't in the religion. It's almost like a pharisaical idea.
Yeah, so. But I don't think people object because on religious grounds. I think they object because the connotation just makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, when I went to grad school, I remember that this every other word that they would just describe things like, this effer went over here. And I was so effing. And I was like, oh my gosh.
You know? I don't really like... Yeah. Swearing either, even though you get used to it if you're working in construction or something, like you get used to hearing it. But
now I feel
so
really
I sympathize,
bad.
Brooke and Aaron, if you're listening.
I feel really guilty now.
I'll beep out Andy's potty mouth.
Yeah,
and I'll stop
and for
using
the record,
the A-word.
It's you two we have to beep out. So
yeah, Ben never did it. Yeah, but Ben's gonna go to hell anyway because he drinks coffee. So.
Yep, that's all it takes.
Well, I feel so guilty now because like I just. Oh, I spent my whole life feeling guilty about things I don't even have to feel guilty about.
Yeah. Yep. That you're not alone.
Okay.
Okay. So that we just talked about Cold Pursuit. I'll just make one final comment because we didn't really discuss it. There's a really bizarre, it's not even a scene. It's a moment after the climax, after everything's over.
It's hilarious.
Apparently this Native American kid has been hang gliding for like 45 minutes.
All night.
Oh, all night. Yeah. And his hang glider dripped, like at the end of the movie,
you
Liam Neeson and White Bull are riding in the snowplow out into the distance. They're going to just make a life together, I guess. And the paraglider guy comes down and lands right inside of like the snow chopper thing, like that rips the snow up and spits it out.
It's almost like a wood chopper.
Yeah,
snow.
Yeah, exactly. And his body gets all chopped up and the blood gets spit out. It's
so weird. And then it ends.
And the movie's over.
So that was like the closing scene of the movie?
But what happens is you see the American Indian drug lord and Liam Neeson driving away like cowboy and Tonto and what's those two?
Sundance Kid, like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid? No, they died at the end.
There was an Indian with his Tonto. Anyway, it felt like that. But then you see like this bird-like guy flying with a yellow parachute, and it's pretty beautiful, but then all of a sudden he lands in the chop machine. It was bizarre.
And what happened with the kid? He just rode off in a snowplow?
Yeah.
He must have been like 9 years old,
right,
and like
right
after the shootout.
Keep going.
Okay, this movie sounds like a mess.
The cop shows up and sees all the dead bodies, and she calls in on her radio. Looks like there's a little boy driving away in a snowplow, and they never go back to it. That's all you see is him driving away.
Yeah, you don't know what happened to the boy.
Snowplow.
He just rode off. It did end, I don't know if they were like setting up a sequel or something, because they could start the sequel right there, because it's a cliffhanger. Like, what? Why? Where did the little boy go? Why was Liam Neeson and White Bull together? What are they going
to
do?
Well, and the part where he happens to have this like machine that chops down trees and Viking's trying to get away, right?
They show that in the preview where he gets, that wood, I guess it's like a deforesting machine that'll chop down a full-grown tree,
but
strip off
like
the branches.
Clamps or something?
Yeah. And he basically, what is the word where you like, you take a sword or something and stick it through somebody into the wall. Is that skewer?
Yeah.
So he does that, but to a car. He drops it on the...
He like body slams it on top of the car.
It's in the preview. But the weird thing is all these guys are shooting each other and dying. And Liam Neeson, he does that move. Must have taken like 5 minutes to like cut down the tree, strip off all the branches and lift it over his car. The drug dealer guy that got killed by it, he had like a full minute while he was watching to get out of his car and not get smushed
and
by
his tires were like spinning for like 5 minutes trying to get out.
Well, Seth, that's a really good point. Almost any action movie, if you focus on the bad guys, like their fighting style, it's horrible.
They're pulling their punches.
And then they'll do a weak punch, then they'll just pause and wait to be hit back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good movies don't do that, but...
Yeah, I mean, the most terrifying bad guy I've ever seen was Heath Ledger when he does that, the Joker.
Yeah.
Next movie?
Okay. We just reviewed Cold Pursuit. That was our spoiler review for Cold Pursuit. From this point forward, we're going to discuss spoilers for the Lego Movie 2, the second part.
That part you mentioned where normally they're in like the Lego world and it's cartoonish. But then there were parts where they are actual Legos inside the house in the basement of where the kids are playing with them.
It's like live action.
Yeah, and they could move, but they like struggled to move, like they were kind of stuck laying down. And
it
so
it was like stop action animation, right? With the way they moved, it was
they kind of moved pretty much the same, but they were actual real life Legos instead of like a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their facial expressions weren't moving and stuff.
I guess I'm kind of confused about like what was going on there. Am I supposed to believe that they are now autonomous in the cartoon world? They were being played with by the kids, and I thought they were going to go somewhere with that, but they did not. They didn't seem to resolve or explore that too much. It was just something that happened.
Yeah, you know how like the way they were moving it, it made me think like if you're playing with a G.I. Joe, you don't move its legs and stuff. You just kind of bounce it on the ground. Like,
yeah,
so that's the way they were kind of moving. It looked like there was a little kid that was basically invisible for the audience, but kind of bouncing them around and making them fight the way you get like a G.I. Joe in each of your hands and you bump them against each other. And that's how they fight. Like, that's kind of what it looked like was happening to me.
So what do you think? Do you think they were actually, I mean... That part started and I thought, this reminds me of Toy Story. Is there going to be this thing where they can't move when humans are around?
Yeah.
You know, I got more confused.
It reminded me of Toy Story too. Yeah. Cause it was like, well, you've already given us this world where they move and they're animated and everything works. What now you're like changing the whole paradigm where they're still moving and talking, but now it's like, it's a different style. Like it was just hard to understand. Maybe that symbolized him growing up and becoming more self-aware or becoming more aware of the, you know, what was imagination wasn't what wasn't. But yeah, I didn't understand that either. I can't really enlighten.
Well, it was a cool thing, but they could have done something with it and it was just, they didn't. And I really like how the movie ended, and I thought it was really sad when the little girl's like, well, I just wanted to play with you, because I've seen that situation with my kids, and it's so sad.
Me too. I know. That is so sad. Like, the happiest thing that happens as a parent is when your kids are nice to each other.
Yeah.
And that's really rare, because most of the time they just don't get along. And when they do play together, you're like, oh my gosh, this is like heaven.
That's the
best. How sweet this is. They're playing together.
I know.
Okay. So any more spoiler thoughts on the Lego Movie 2?
I left the movie, which is weird. I left the movie wondering if I would recommend it to anybody. And I'm not sure. And I was also wondering if maybe I just didn't enjoy it because, I don't know, am I like really hungry or am I really grumpy? Or
yeah, I feel like I wanted to like it, but you know, I felt that way about the last one too. The last Lego movie came out and it got really good reviews and everybody was talking about it. And I was just kind of like, it was fun, but I don't know. It didn't, and was it just me? Was it like the atmosphere I was in? Was it because my daughter kept asking me to take her to the bathroom?
Oh my
like
goodness.
What, you know, what was it that made it? But I do feel like I didn't escape into the story the way I usually want to in a movie.
Yeah.
I want to laugh and cry in a movie and I want to like get lost in the story. And that didn't really happen for me in this one or the last one, to be honest. But I did enjoy the musical numbers, actually. I thought that was an improvement on the first one.
Oh, the music was like the musicals. Yeah, they were really good. And did you see the ending credits? The ending credits music was really like good. Really good. And I was thinking, why did they save the good music till the very end? Like,
don't they say that in the very
say something like
the
that.
Music? It says the best music's always at the credits, and then it says that in the actual song.
Yeah, I tweeted like I didn't understand what they were trying to accomplish with the music in this movie. They're playing like 80s hair band music, and the only songs that could be fun, they were like downer versions.
Well, what about the new manufactured pop song that was happening in the younger daughter's world? Didn't you like that?
Well, yeah, it was just a little over the top, being like this song's gonna get stuck in your head like over and over and over and over.
Yeah,
like
that's how Everything Is Awesome was.
Well, the song was a commentary. It wasn't actually, the lyrics were just commentary. So what's fun about that? I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so does that wrap up the Lego Movie 2?
Yeah, for me.
From now on, we're going to be discussing the spoilers for What Men Want.
Oh, maybe I should have responded to you first, Andy, but that is a good question about like what criteria do you use to judge a movie? And like, what are the things that you look for and don't look for? And, you know, examining, are those good reasons or not? Yeah, I wish you would have seen this one. I loved her boyfriend. I thought he was the coolest guy. I want to be his friend.
And good looking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, totally almost too good looking for her. Almost like a mismatch.
And well, I tweeted this. What does she see in him? I don't get it.
You mean what does he see in her?
Sorry. What does he see in her? Think about it. You're that guy. And imagine from his perspective. Like,
well, she's professionally successful. And then he's got a kid. So he might have a little bit more difficulty like on the dating market because he's got baggage.
I guess. He just didn't come across as someone that insecure that would like keep going back to her and keep letting her come back. And towards the end of the movie, I did not like her at all. Like everything she did was rude. Like, can you imagine being in a relationship with her? Every day she's like flapping her hands in your face, like, get out of my face, you know, and giving you those looks and just being super selfish.
They had a couple scenes that I think were supposed to give you an idea of her character and maybe the way her character progressed. These were the two sex scenes. So the first sex scene with her boyfriend, she is, she's very violent and dominating, and they try and play it up in a comedic way, but I wasn't laughing. I didn't really even understand it, but she's like struggling. I'm sorry. She's strangling him. And then she starts like slapping him in the face. And then right after she's done, she just like pushes him away and lays down and starts snoring, which is really like, it seemed to me to be a really stereotypical male thing to do, you know?
Maybe that's what they were going for.
Yeah. That she was like a man. But I didn't want to see a version where she's a man. We've already seen that. I want to see a version where she's a woman and trying to understand men.
Right. And that's interesting. You made the connection where they were just doing a role reversal. Mm-hmm. I saw it as a super selfish person just doing whatever they do.
You know, on Twitter, Ben, a couple weeks ago, you made a comment about like so there's all these movies like Star Wars, Ghostbusters, and then this, What Men Want, where they just do a gender reversal where they get a role that's already been played by men and they just swap in women.
Uh-huh.
And you were saying on Twitter, well, if it works, then it's great. And somebody on Twitter was like, it never worked. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But I think that putting a woman into like switching a woman for a man is inherently very interesting. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's like adding salmon to your salad instead of chicken. It's just, it's a different experience and almost more interesting in a lot of ways. I thought this movie was set up to be even more interesting than What Women Want. It could have been. They just didn't do a good job on the execution.
Yeah, Seth, I totally agree with you on that. And I don't know, I'm like scratching my head about when they made this movie, she wasn't an unpleasant person because of her, the actress's real personality. That was the character she was playing.
Yeah.
But there is a point in the movie where I think you lose the audience. I wanted to be on her side. I was trying to be on board, but it just got worse and worse. And also her in the movie, like her coworkers, only one of them could really like stand her. And then her friends. Yeah,
even her friends turn against her.
Yeah. Right? At the end of the movie, they try to redeem her like, oh, she's grown and
yeah,
she's trying with this guy. But it was a really weak attempt. Like she had like this halfway acknowledgement of, oh, I might try to be better once.
She didn't earn it. Like she might have earned it in, like her friends might have said she earned it, but as an audience member, you were looking at her like, no, I'm not forgiving you yet for being a jerk for the whole course of this movie.
Right. So she had this gift for a weekend or a week or whatever. She tried to exploit it the best she could. And I guess the only way she could get that guy is if she could read minds and like manipulate her way in. Maybe that's the only way it makes sense. But I don't see what, I don't know.
Well, I do feel like they did try and shoehorn this message where he says, you don't learn by what somebody says. You learn from their heart. You can know what they think, but you don't know what's in their heart. And it does seem like they tried to include this message that pretty crudely they added where she learns to listen to people and figure out what's in their heart instead of reading their thoughts.
Yeah.
When she loses her power, she has a conversation with her boyfriend where supposedly she does that, which is when he kind of warms up to her again. But that was pretty crude.
They tried to salvage it at the end, and I don't think it landed. It didn't land for me. I was already against her.
I would have forgiven everything if it had been funny, if the movie had been funny. Like I saw Bridesmaids, which is a similar genre, and I laughed my freaking butt off.
Yeah, well, that was really funny. When,
another similar one, I Feel Pretty with Amy Schumer.
Oh my goodness, yes.
I laughed so hard, and it was a very similar premise too.
That movie is so underrated. It was hilarious. That movie is
so good, yeah.
You know, it never went crude. It never went uncomfortable. It was just funny the whole time.
So I was thinking, like when I got home, my daughter said, well, maybe you would have liked it more if you were a woman. And I was like, is that true? It could be true. I mean, it could be, but
yeah.
I don't think so. Because I don't think I have a problem with the genre. It could be that a woman would enjoy it more than a man because they would identify more. And maybe a black woman would enjoy it more than a white woman. That could be true.
Yeah.
It probably is true, to be honest. So
I'm sure that's
probably not
true.
The target audience.
I mean, if you read any movie reviews, like stuff we've talked about, some people love it, some people hate it. And it's like, well, what? Like it's hard to put yourself in their shoes, but you know, it's a real thing.
It is. Yeah, it is. Okay. Is that it for What Men Want?
Well, I just have one more question. Mm-hmm. If you went on a date with a girl and then the next time you see her, she's told everyone and her coworkers that you guys are married, like, would you stay with her? Like,
but he didn't know that, did he? I thought that was one of the tensions.
He didn't
at the very end of the movie.
Well, he learned all the stuff at the end.
Yeah.
Like, in their relationship, I'm trying to figure out what she did that was like okay and normal. Like, what is he doing with her? And why does he take her back? She gives that little apology. She drops off a cake, gives an apology. He's like, oh, I'll give you another chance. I was like, no, dude, no. This year, you can be free.
Yeah, that was... The funny thing is, it's so manufactured. And I mean, this would never happen in real life. In real life, if you wanted to pull a con, you'd pull him aside and say, hey, man, I need to impress this guy. I told him we're married. Can you just do me a solid and act like we're married? Like, he probably would have been like, oh, okay, sure. I'll play along or I won't, either way.
Right.
But instead, she tries to pull this double con where she's fooling both of them. She's trying to fool the athlete's dad, I guess.
By the way, she's married. Is Tracy Morgan. He was like the life of the show to me. He was so funny.
He was pretty funny, but also really bizarre. I couldn't follow him.
Well,
what did you think of Pete Davidson? Is that his name?
Yeah, Pete Davidson.
Ariana Grande's ex-boyfriend?
Well, Pete was funny. I mean, he didn't really have a really funny role in here. He didn't have much.
He was short, but he had a very strong presence. Like,
yeah, he does.
For some reason, he has these wild eyes and wild hair and this really unique way of just like moving about. Every time he was on the screen, I was like, oh wow, there's like some sparks right now.
Do you watch him on SNL?
Not very often. I think I've watched like one or two episodes in the last month.
So he used to be in skits, and then he started coming on the Weekend Update where it's more like an interview.
Yeah.
And
now I saw what you posted to on Twitter with his review of The Mule.
Oh, I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
So now he goes on SNL only for the Weekend Update part, and they're just interviewing him. Just because I can't figure out why he's so interesting to listen to, but he is.
He's interesting to watch too.
Yeah.
He has these wild eyes.
And Tracy Morgan, did you ever see 30 Rock with him?
I didn't watch that show a lot.
Okay. Because he was pretty much the same character in What Men Want.
Oh.
But I loved him in 30 Rock, and I thought he was great here too.
I like that cameo with, who's that billionaire that owns some basketball team? That's on Shark Tank.
I don't watch sports, so I didn't recognize any of those sports guys.
But the billionaire, you got to know.
Yeah,
who he is.
He's so famous. What's his name?
Mark Cuban. Did you know who Mark Cuban is, right, Ben?
No.
Oh, okay. He was in the poker scene, and he kept saying like, I should stop playing poker with such poor people.
Oh, that
like,
was kept him?
Saying stuff like that. Yeah. I thought that was funny. Okay, I didn't do a summary of the plot, but that's okay. There's not much to it. You get it all in the preview. Yep. Anyway. Okay, does that wrap it up for What Men Want?